1930s, President Franklin Delano Roosevelt addressed the nation through a series of radio broadcasts known as the Fireside Chats. His aim was to reassure the common man that our society would recover from its troubled times. But we're far from 1930, and I deal with a different kind of far. For a new era of worldly frustration, we offer a fresh conversation. I'm Greg Carlwood, and these are the Fireside Chats.
Yo ho, yo ho, it's down the hole we go. What's happening, Higher Side Chatters from sunny San Diego? I'm Greg Carlwood, drinking a little drink, smoking a little smoke, and marinating in the high strangeness that is today's show. I got our good pal Crow here, and these are some of my favorite episodes. And for those who don't know the biggest bullet points in the Crow saga, they are his high-def moon footage and capturing of what he calls the lunar wave. Check it out if you haven't. But it looks like an old VHS tracking bar that slowly passes over the moon twice every time. It's been captured on 9 different occasions now from around the world, and it's freaking weird. This led to speculation that the moon is some type of facade, and when you look at the moon as a control center for the Earth, it's surprising how many references you can find about that, from conspiratorial whispers and rumors to pervasive long-standing themes in media to ancient cultures that write about a time before the moon. And all this is strange enough, but then someone sent Crow a trove of research in Russian from a scientist named Hadibau, or more accurately, Hadibov. And this guy, from the translation, seems to be talking about the same thing. And then many new ideas and connections rush to the surface, like the octave system that compartmentalizes certain frequencies, a race of spider-like beings who brought a control grid into our solar system 18,000 years ago and infected the minds of man, an analysis of the cycles and systems of the grandfather clock-like gears that are our celestial bodies of the solar system, their effects, and the different genotypes of humanity that are categorized in 3 groups, all affected by the ancient control grid. And this has been a pretty fascinating saga to me. As the translations get better and the pieces of the puzzle are put together, it's definitely out there. But plenty of mainstream scientists talk about the holographic universe, that more empty space exists than solid matter. And what is string theory but the idea that our reality is brought into existence by vibration and resonance? Not far off from octaves in my book. Now, Crow and I have done 2 previous shows about these breadcrumbs, and that prompted me to hire Crow to write a 10-piece article series about unraveling this info, and so far 5 have been published on the THC sites. And so today we're getting together to get an update on where we are with this stuff, how the conspiratorial community is responding to this material, as well as Crow himself. And this one goes for about 3 hours if you are signed up for THC Plus. But I just wanted to throw this little preface in for anyone who's just getting on this THC train. But that's what's what in Higher Side Land. And I hope you are strapped in with your tray tables in the upright locked position, because on the other side of this little ditty, we're pulling all the threads on this conspiracy sweater. Enjoy.
Sweet dreams to the elite. We're calling them out on THC. Uncovering secrets and conspiracies. Everybody's looking for something. Some of them want to use you. Some of them want to get used by you. Some of them want to abuse you. Some of them want to be abused.
All right, people, add today to the list of days where we're going to go as far as we can into the exploration of the true nature of reality and dismantle the illusionary framework constructed around us. Because we know the planet's powerful puppet masters have made huge investments in implementing their official narratives, censored sciences, and carved up simplified histories deep into the collective minds of the masses. And although this manipulation runs deep and their Rockefeller-funded institutions seem so well established in the modern world as to seem almost eternal, still, many of us have seen enough holes in the education we've been handed from on high to really start pushing the envelope when it comes to questioning just which constructs we've always taken for granted might not be based in reality at all. From something as simple as the acknowledgement that Columbus didn't discover America, although kids are still taught that today, to the mental middle-of-the-meter understanding that 9/11 was just another footnote in a long string of false flag events, to the furthest fringes of full-on freaky, where many are questioning the very construct of Earth, space, the moon, and just what a prison planet could truly be. And to crank the dial up to a bona fide 11 with me today is my main man Crow. You know him from his popular YouTube channel capturing many UFOs and odd anomalies, as well as the conspiratorially famous footage of the lunar wave. He's been a big part of the THC family with two shows in the bag already and now writing a 10-piece article series for THC, of which we've seen five phenomenal entries so far. Here to discuss just how vast the constructs of control could be, as well as the content of his first five THC articles, his latest research, most recent footage, and current understanding of the Russian research of Hattie Bao. Always a fan favorite. You know him, you love him. Crow, my man, welcome home.
Thanks for having me back, bud.
Yeah, man, it's always a fun time when we get together. It has been a wild ride so far. Hopefully most of the listeners have heard our first two shows together and have kind of checked out your THC articles. If this is the first time you're hearing Crow, then be prepared to just get thrown right into the deep end of the pool. But I, for one, have really loved watching the articles kind of massage out a clear understanding of the implications of both the lunar wave and the Hattie Bao research. And I guess we really got to start there, because it seems like you've gotten a much better handle on both of these things since we last talked, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I think there's a point where you kind of step back, and this is true. You know, you see so many people kind of in the conspiracy realm online. You know, you take the people who are looking at Sandy Hook or something, and what tends to happen is people realize that something's not right, and then they dive into details, and that's kind of a double-edged sword. While it brings you understanding, at some point you got to quit digging for more details and just understand that you're looking at deception. And the lunar wave is no different. At one point, I just kind of had to step back, and with the Hattie Bao stuff particularly, you know, we had three critical key pieces of his research that lined up perfectly with what I had come to understand about the lunar wave, which to me demonstrated it was beyond coincidence. But having said that, he says a lot more than just those three things. And in my lifetime, I don't think I'll be able to vet them. So what I kind of did is I stepped back away from the whole thing and just watched and, you know, considered what had happened to date. And I reformed some of my language. You know, the lunar wave had been referred to as a hologram for a long time. At this point, I'm referring to it as a facade. But I think that probably the Hattie Bao description is very helpful. And you actually sent me a link of a gentleman, I forget the website, who did a blog that was top-notch for digging through this very difficult research and just kind of bullet-pointing out the main points that correlate with the lunar wave. And so what we find in Hattie Bao's description is that we're looking at basically a facade that we call the moon, that you have been told is a rock, that is not, and it is made by octaves and tonality, which is a direct reference to what the average human being would consider music, as an example. So that's kind of one of the places where we're at, where what so many people want a label, you know, what is this facade that you're talking about? Is it a hologram? Is it this? Is it that? Problem is we don't really have the language to describe it, and in my view, if we've been handed a false reality, then that means we believe in a fantasy. Now, if I come along and say that's a fantasy and then replace it with what I think it is, all I've done is substituted another fantasy. So at this point, what I say publicly is the moon is not what you think. It is some sort of a facade, and I really offer no model beyond that.
Yeah, and you do make a good point with the conspiracy community overall, and this has come up on the show recently too, is separating the data points from the narrative or from the interpretation that the individual puts on it. And that happens all the time. We see a few data points where we're like, oh, we're clearly being lied to on issue X, Y, and Z. And then the researcher says, so that must mean yada, yada, yada. And that part is just conjecture. It's just opinion. And sometimes that really screws up people's acceptance of the data point, the original data point that is probably the thing we should be paying attention to the most, because we're looking for areas where authority is lying, and we're trying to extrapolate just how far that goes, just how many things we take as a given are actually given to us from someone who is being deceptive. And so I think, yeah, we got to separate the data points from the interpretation of the individual researchers, but gathering all the points from all these different people really does help us get a clearer picture. And this kind of dovetails into something you were telling me about. You're actually working on Crow's Laws, because things are getting a little crazy in the alternative community. There's a lot of mudslinging going around when really we agree with like 90% of the information. We are agreeing with the lies, but then people's interpretations come up, and if they're different, then they start labeling other people as disinformation or, you know, you're a CIA guy, you know, you're working for the establishment. It's not necessarily true. In fact, when you look at the what the mainstream accepts as true, you're 99% on the same page. It's just this one thing, and that undoes a lot of the good work. It creates a bad environment. And so tell us a little bit about these Crow's Laws you're working on.
Okay, well, this is based on the really observable fact that any organization, and we'll just randomly use the Flat Earth since you brought it up. Now, the Flat Earth is an organization that's been around a lot longer than the internet. But the minute you create a MUFON, the minute you create a Flat Earth society, what you have done is created an entity that can then be infiltrated.
Yeah.
Now, the powers that be, anytime they want to disagree with you, they will infiltrate that. You will not know they're there. You may not even understand when the deceptions occur. Or they may simply come in and just start the infighting where every brain cycle spent on being negative has lost the possibility of moving forward within, you know, the accepted idea that was, you know, initiated with this group. Having said this, I began to look at it. And as a matter of fact, this morning I was invited to a Flat Earth roundtable with all the big names, and I declined. I said I have no interest in that. And the main reason is because what I see is one fantasy being plucked off that we've accepted for eons, and another fantasy being produced to replace it. And there is no human way for these people to actually demonstrate that this new theory or fantasy that they're replacing the old one with has any merit. And this is where I came to the conclusion that I needed to create Crow's Laws. What Crow's Laws are going to be are the very rules that I bound myself to in order to become aware, in order to see again for the first time, to train my mind, to train my being, to once again be able to go out into the world and seek for reality and shed the illusion that is being kind of perpetrated on us from every angle. And and I've said it so many times in public before, one of those laws is very simple. Belief is the enemy of knowing. Now, when I write these out and post them, there will be more description than that, but using this one example, belief is a thing that is entered into by choice, and there is almost no verification or vetting done of any kind. You just simply say, yep, I'm going to believe that. Now, once a mind believes something, it can no longer see detail or critically think. And this is exactly why belief is the enemy of knowing. Now, this is not meant to be a direct kick at any religion. That's not what I do. People are free to believe in whatever religion they want. What this is meant to do is to demonstrate that knowing is a thing that is not belief. Once you know a thing, it needs no defense. It is exactly as saying the sky is blue. It's not an arguable thing anymore. But the obstacle to knowing is, in fact, belief, and that's going to be one of the laws that I write out. So there's an example of what's to come.
Yeah, I think you make a great point about the Flat Earth situation. And ever since I did a Flat Earth show with Eric Dubay, a lot of Flat Earth people have been very vocal in comments and emails to me saying, well, why didn't you ask this guest about the Flat Earth? Why didn't you ask your next guest about the Flat Earth? Well, look, every show, it's not going to come up because a lot of people aren't even entertaining it, and it doesn't necessarily fit with everybody's research. And so, I mean, you just want to hear everybody shoot it down? Like, what kind of show is that? And I agree with you. It's just, we're looking at the same data points as them, as the Flat Earth people. We're looking at the lies. We're seeing through it, which is 99% of the battle. But then because we're not willing to categorically state that the Earth is flat, then, you know, we're the bad guy somehow. Like, look, we're still in this thing together. That's what I would say.
No, and in my view, it is far more important to help people understand that the model we've been accepted, or that we have accepted through history, is false. Now, when you do that, people will begin to critically think again. Now, the problem is people want truth. So they say, okay, well, if that's not real, what is? So that's what these laws I'm writing are about. Mm-hmm. What the laws are about is removing the obstacles that will allow you to get to truth. And finding truth is an individual thing. Knowing something cannot always be communicated. In terms of the Flat Earth, I have always gone on the record saying the description of this planet that we live on and space and the sun and the moon that we have been given is false. Mm-hmm. But I will say no more than that, because what will happen if this works is that enough people will come to think about this and then really start to look into it and then really begin to consider maybe this is possible. When enough people do that, the kind of 100th monkey thing will occur where an almost a mind virus spreads across populations that have never known each other and everything changes. That's when you start to get to truth, or you can do it individually. But I think the flat earth is a good example of what we're talking about here.
Yeah, it is. It is. So let's get into the data a little bit. A lot of the listeners are probably very familiar with the idea of a controlling elite that has been in charge for a long, long time. But even for the people who will take it that far, I think we're constantly surprised and challenged by just how vast a system it really could be. Now, if you were going to try to define the system as you see it or paint a picture, I mean, you mentioned that octaves play a huge role, but what else is there? Can you kind of paint us a picture with your latest understanding of how you'd really nail this control structure down?
Right. Well, one of the articles that I wrote for you recently, one of the subtitles within the article said something to the effect of, I tried to see beyond deception with a telescope, but I couldn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm trying to point out there is that at first you see some event, a Sandy Hook, a 9/11, whatever it is, and you say, wait a minute, that's not right. And so you get in and there comes a point in your life when you understand, yeah, that was a deception. That was a wholesale deception. But you have to step back. And what you will find is that the deception you're seeing does not end at a state border. It does not end at a country's border. It does not end at a continent. And as a matter of fact, if you come to my backyard and look through my telescope, you're still seeing a deception with no edges. It is everything. Everything you see is part of the system we live in. And that's really tough to express to people in any meaningful way. It's akin to knowing. You can know something, but communicating that knowing to others cannot always be done. That's something they have to arrive at on their own. But having said that, that is really the reality of things. And the real problem is people are going to want some kind of a model to demonstrate what you're talking about. Well, unfortunately, human beings don't really have a way to provide that model. So it all starts with understanding that deception exists and it's all around you.
Mm-hmm. And before we started recording, we were talking about these things, and you had mentioned that it's like a chess game, and we're just shocked at how many moves ahead they really are. And I think that really nails it in terms of what is shocking us. Because if you look at something like a Sandy Hook, you're like, okay, that's not that hard to put into motion. You know, it maybe takes a year of planning, and then you create the event, and then you have the after effect that you wanted, the desired result, and then it's over. And it seems fairly understandable how that would occur. But then you take something like 9/11, and I've read some pretty deep level books about 9/11 that talk about it being built with sacrifice in mind because of the symbolism in the structure, the trident symbol being part of the architecture, and a couple other elements too. But then that really blows the mind because it's like, whoa, we're not talking about, you know, the Bush administration wanting to put through the Patriot Act and creating this event. We're talking about the possibility that it was built to later be destroyed.
Yes.
And that is pretty crazy. And you can take that and extrapolate it even further with some of this stuff. And the real surprise comes from how many steps ahead are they really? And it's multi-generational, it's centuries.
That's right. That's right. And not only is that right, you've got to understand one of the reasons that we can't provide a model for how this thing is operating that we can now detect in this age. Is it's something that is so foreign to you that you would probably consider very dark, maybe akin to black magic, or to use words that don't really match the situation to try to convey to people. It would, for the average person, what is being done would be very foreign to their belief system. It's akin to saying to a vegetarian, we're going to go out and kill a pig and eat it. That vegetarian would be repulsed by that. So that is kind of what we're seeing. But to demonstrate to folks, here's an example. You and I are in San Diego. A number of years ago, I don't know if you remember, there was a veterinarian man who was portrayed on the news as having gone out for a swim and a white shark killed him. Do you remember that?
I do.
Yeah, at the time, I had not yet removed my TV and stopped watching news, which there is no television or news in my life now for a reason. But anyhow, I said, that's not right. That's deception. And, you know, we dug in and looked at the reasons why. Well, fast forward all these years, and a couple weeks ago, they advertised Shark Week on cable TV. Okay? so they further marinated society in sharks. And I will preface this whole conversation by saying San Diego has never had a problem with sharks. Never. I'm over 50 years old. I've lived here most of my life, and in the times I've been gone, I've always come back. There has never been a shark problem here. So what we see is all of a sudden in the news pops up these two children. I think they were on the east, but again, I don't watch news. But these two children were said to have lost arms or something like this to put the terror out. Well, yesterday on the news in San Diego, the lifeguard was given drones, and we were, I think it was a 5 or a 10, maybe 15-second news spot where they said, oh, the lifeguards are helping to save lives. Now they've got drones. They showed the drone go up and look down on sharks in the water. So you can kind of see this classic marination of a society to an end that no one could imagine. They seem so unrelated, and you can only wonder at how many other avenues are going to be approached with the same deception. But now in San Diego, we have lifeguards who are respected individuals. They save lives. These men are out there using the drones, thinking that they are doing what they're supposed to do, help people be safe. But in fact, what is going on is the powers that be are getting their drones in the air on the back of fake false newscasts. Mm-hmm. So there's the chess game in spades over, I don't know how many years now, 5, 6.
Yeah, that's a great point, because the elite are losing the PR battle on drones. Everybody is wary of drones. Even in the mainstream, individuals are very cautious and kind of skeptical of why we need drones in the air. So you gotta create something. And this is, again, problem, reaction, solution. Problem, sharks, reaction, panic, solution, drone surveillance. It's right there.
Yeah, you know, my wife and I often sit here and chuckle that basically a lot of how this works is by kicking puppies. If you get a group of people together and you kick a puppy, almost 100% of those people are going to be outraged and very upset. The minute you get a group of people fearful, upset, enraged, they're very malleable. You can do things with a mindset that is like that. So we attribute it to that. And when that single puppy gets discovered as to be false, or it wasn't enough to do the trick, they just get more puppies, and pretty soon you're looking, like with 9/11, a stadium full of puppies. But this time they don't kick them, they burn them. So, you know, you just kind of have to come to the realization of what television is and what a powerful tool it is, not because so much it may be affecting you in an individual way, but what it is doing to a mass of people, and the 100th monkey plays back into that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, man, that's definitely an interesting play that they're putting out there, but it's pretty clear to see the pattern. Another thing, something I wrote down that you had wrote in one of your articles that is pretty provocative and interesting, is you write that we find the moon and this system is constantly associated with death, sleep, illusion, and mystery, and there's a reason for this. I'm curious what that reason is, and it might tie into what we were talking about before we got in the air about death and corporations and stuff like that, but go into that a little bit for us.
Well, I mean, anyone can be aware of the obvious undertone of what I said there. For lunacy as an example, you know, why are lunatics associated with the moon in any way?
Mm-hmm.
There's a reason for that. But if people truly want to begin to know something on their own, independent of what you or I might say, here's what you do. From now on, when you're watching a movie, media, commercials, anything that's coming at you in a kind of constructed form from human beings that have put it out there to inform or entertain you, whenever you see the moon, if it's for 2 frames or 20 minutes, pay attention to what was said immediately before and immediately after, and you will very quickly understand the meme that is being programmed out there and being echoed. But more so, you will also constantly catch where a character is killed or somebody dies in a movie, there will be a quick flash to the moon. Now, this absolutely relates with what Hattie Bob is saying, you know, this whole idea of brains being recycled out of us or into us, this whole kind of idea that we don't have a way to better understand or vet. But, you know, I studied Tibetan Buddhism for a number of years and Christianity back to its original languages, and you find the same things. The moon is always associated in this very bizarre way with lunacy, sleep, and death. And in the modern age, in this kind of ghoulish deception age that we find ourselves in now, more times than not, it is directly associated with death. So the question's got to become, when we check out of this little play we're in here, does the moon play a role in that? every individual should be thinking about that. I mean, if this deception is so vast, you got to wonder, you know, is there a guy standing there when you die that says, here, go into the light, you know,
right, maybe
the light's not the best place for you to go. But I'm not here to tell you whether or not that's true. That is a personal thing that you have to do for yourself, because that's a pretty big responsibility.
Yeah, we definitely did that show fairly recently, too. It's funny. And you mentioned breathing life into dead things. How does this tie in? I mean, because this dovetails with, you know, Jordan Maxwell is definitely a famous conspiracy researcher who would always talk about maritime law and
right, the
birth certificate and going to court and claiming yourself to be that. That has actually a tie in here, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's actually true. This whole system has an undertone of death. Basically, in the system we live, you are being coerced to be and do all the things that you are. And in that, you are actually, I heard it said a certain way, just give me a second here, that we are voluntarily committing suicide. That's how I heard this described. And when I heard it, I thought, wow, now that hits the hammer on the nail so hard that the nail is destroyed. What this means is, if we use corporations as an example, now words have meaning. If you take the word corporation, the prefix of that word is corpse. That's a dead body. And if you understand how corporations work, you will understand that it is given the rights of a living being, and actually the officers of that corporation have to, by law, do certain things to make sure the corporation is well fed, that it makes more money next year and more the next. Mm-hmm. So what they're doing is taking this dead entity and breathing life into it. It's this ghoulish undertone that we see. But all facets of the system have traces of this ghoulish undertone. Even becoming sick and dying at the age of 74, even having a birthday. There are cultures on this planet still today where if you ask the people how old they are, they can't tell you because they don't celebrate birthdays. In our culture, every year we say, yep, we're one year closer to death. And by the way, did you know the national average for a male is 74 and a woman is, I don't know, 79 or 80? So it's this pre-programming, this voluntary suicide to pull your mental condition into the idea that, you know, there's this fixed age where we all got to die. And the same is true of sickness. It's a very ghoulish thing, but it's undertoned all the way through the system. And I don't know how well I described that, but I did what I could.
Yeah, that's not bad. It's almost like a reverse, it's like the placebo effect. You're using it against us because by saying
exactly, you're
80, 90 years old, you know that it's got to be up soon. And I kind of really like the wordplay stuff, but you got to be kind of careful because it only really works in English. And often we're talking about control structures that are so much older, but yet they can make the language, you know, the language, they can create it to be whatever they want.
But I would point out that it doesn't only work in English. I can't speak for every language on the planet. Who knows? Maybe there's some Aboriginal tribes that haven't been destroyed yet by the powers that be that still have some kind of an ancient connection to a time before this. I don't know. But what you will find is that, you know, like English, it has all kinds of Germanic roots. It has Latin roots. It has Greek roots. We use words that are even Russian in some cases, and Yiddish. We've adopted Yiddish words. And what I would point out is if you look at gematria and numerology, it demonstrates flat out that English is not alone in this. It's just that English may function in a slightly different version. There is no major language, in my view, that is not subject to what we're talking about here.
And that's a great point, too. I interviewed Marty Leeds quite a while ago, but he's very big in gematria. And the way he describes it is there is a lock and a key. Every language is its own lock that requires its own key to be opened, and you have to get a different cipher to really understand, you know, the code within it, but yet it's still the same thing. It's still a magical spell, just a different tweak.
Well, that, you know, you hit it right on the head there. There is a reason why when we are 4 years old, we are taught to, quote, spell. We are taught to spell. Words have meaning. And people, even myself, I know this of myself. I say so many words in a day that I did not stop to understand what I was saying. And even if I would have stopped, probably would not have known enough to understand what I was saying. And this is kind of a funny catch when you really begin to realize that when you're looking at those Harry Potter movies and those kids are being taught to spell, you know, it may be a different level of things, but it's no different than what you were taught when you were 3 or 4 years old. The point is, You know, there in like the Kabbalion and the Emerald Tablets, they talk about, I think I have those books right, it's one of those really old narratives where in a very old version of Egypt, all the words that were taught to the up-and-coming race, whoever they were, resonated with the object they were speaking about. In other words, if a person said table, the very form, structure, and sound of the word they said had been designed to resonate with the object they were speaking about. Now, when you fast forward kind of to where we are, that's, you know, even to consider if that's possible, we're definitely at a different level. But the point I would make is when you look at the fake newscasts and begin to understand the numerology and gematria, it doesn't stop there. The words all have meaning and the words all have base meanings. And if you use etymology or dictionaries, you can see that a word has numbers of meanings and sometimes they're contrary to each other. But the point is the people that are employing them against you know full well what their meaning is meant to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm with you on that stuff. Something I did want to ask you real quick. I'm used to saying Hattie Bow. Are we saying Hattie Bow? Is that a better pronunciation?
I think Heidi Bob is better, and it was funny because I was watching a Star Trek or something where the Russian guy on the bridge doesn't use W's, he uses V's, and then someone that same day commented, and then another the next, that probably more accurately, Heidi Bob with a V as in Victor would be more accurate.
Right on. Some multidimensional entity is reaching through the ether to get to your consciousness and set shaking and say, hey, man, it's Bob, not Bow. It's almost like a mental clue in the same form of like a crop circle.
It's almost as if this gentleman had spoke any other language but Russian, we would have had so much easier a time getting it into English. There just seems to be a real barrier there.
Yeah, and we're dealing with such complex concepts that it's hard to deconstruct
right.
a sentence because it isn't like, you know, the chicken crossed the road. It's not like you can get just three or four words and then construct the sentence because this stuff is so foreign. You really got to know each individual word.
That's right, and then it's technical at a, you know, really elevated level, and the whole time you're sitting there, okay, is this reality or is this science fiction? So, I mean, there's just many layers of a human being sitting there saying, where's the truth? You know, digging as quick as we can. You know, it comes back to the laws that I'm writing. We do the best we can. That's all we can do.
Yeah, I hear you. And I have been getting more and more into the idea that most of this manipulation, or at least a very pervasive layer of it, is hidden right in plain sight with the marker of the official year one. And I know this comes up in his research also, but we know that that wasn't the year one. We know that we used to be more attuned with things like the lunar calendar before that, and there was a major cultural shift at that moment, and when we ask how long has this manipulation been going on, well, there is a pretty clear indication of this little window of time where a big layer of it was blanketed over the Western culture, at least. Can you talk to us about that period at all? I mean, it's pretty vital to understand, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, I can. And, you know, there's a reason for the old saying, all roads lead to Rome. I did articles when I was still writing for the Fraudulent Examiner trying to see if I could put truth out through regular media, which I could not, which is why I don't write there anymore. But anyhow, the year zero, well, there was no year zero, as we all know, right? So there's the first what the heck. But besides, if you set aside the point that we have a population of human beings that have no idea how we got here or where we were before a certain point in time, people like Hattie Bob are telling us there is no real history below year one. What we can know are things that are pretty concrete. Well, we can know we've been told that Julius Caesar is the guy that jacked up our calendar first. A thinking individual would understand that the Jewish calendar is probably far closer to a reality that would be beneficial to us, simply because they put the new year in March where the vernal equinox or rebirth of everything that grows and lives is. What Julius did for us was jacked our new year away from there and put it back to January. Funny thing is we have sayings that demonstrate this. That's what April Fools is about. When Julius did this, there were people who did not want to let go of the correct version of New Year's, and so they were still celebrating New Year's when April 1 came along, and they were referred to in a derogatory fashion as April Fools. Mm. So you can see the system fighting people even back then, clawing to hold on what they knew to be correct, and we can also see what history did to them. we now have January as the first month. But what we see, and this ties directly to the lunar wave, you know, this is a whole other avenue of the lunar wave that has now opened up to me. I began to consider, because I wrote articles about solar and lunar calendars, and as I wrote about the importance of the vernal equinox, the lunar wave, and that month to the first full moon that we call Easter, some things began to dawn on me. The first thing is, we today, in this Western world where we use the all-seeing eye and the sun as the underpinning of our calendars and everything else, we temporarily cross back to what is called a solar luni calendar to place this one day, Easter. Very strange thing, because the sun cannot provide for when that first full moon comes after the spring equinox. But what I was further thinking is, if you have cultures in the Far East, the Arab nations, the Muslims, the Jewish people in that part of the world, they're based on a lunar calendar. And it occurred to me that if secret societies have any true knowledge that is of value, it must cover how we got here and, you know, truths about our moons, our planets, our Earth. It must have these secret mystery, teachings mm-hmm. that have been hinted all these years, all the way back to the Greek Elysian mysteries. But I began to realize that if you based your calendar on the moon, and I now know that the moon is not what we've been told, then the cultural foundations must have had some understanding of the system we're seeing. And what's funny is, I recently got a post from an individual on my channel that pointed out what I had known a couple years ago but never continued to research it, that the highest and holiest Jewish holiday fell on September 26th in 2012, the night that I filmed the lunar wave for the first time, the best lunar wave that we have, and from Hattie Bob's research, the most important, because people were being turned off, their brains were being cycled out, no more updates for 5 billion plus people starting in 2009, ending in 2012, which, if I was to just accept Hattie Bob, would suggest that that's what I filmed. But having said that, I looked into Yom Kippur, which is the last night of the high holidays, and I started finding all these things about seeking forgiveness from God, things like the finger of God touching man, and then hearkening back to Hattie Bob, where he's saying that's a download coming to the planet to update the people in the system. And it just kind of opened up this whole other thing where it almost gets so overwhelming you don't know what part of it to look at first. But I kind of got off on a tangent on the lunar calendar, but I think you're going to have to pull me back to reality. I forgot where you started with that.
Yeah, just how pervasive that switch is. Like, I'm not even so totally sure what kind of effects that has on a huge culture, but there definitely is some meat on those bones.
In terms of the calendars, it's very clear that in our age, we have been taught that time is linear. And it is also very clear to me that time is really more cyclical, just like any computer program or anything else, a life cycle. We live, we eat, we die, something is born. Those are cycles, and I don't think time is any different. What we find with the current time, and a good example of how this has screwed us up as people and kind of keeps us off balance, is daylight savings time. Twice a year, for no reason whatsoever, they jack your clock around an hour, and it screws with your internal, you know, it screws with the way you're in touch with the very environment you live in, and it takes a while to get used to it, and right about when you're used to it again, they change it again. And so you can kind of see the power of what calendars do. And to be honest with you, a lunar calendar divides much more evenly into the time we're told is a year, as was demonstrated by the Mayans. But, you know, then there's this whole question of, if a year is 365 days, why is a circle only 360 days? So, I mean, that opens up a whole other avenue of what's going on here.
Yeah, man, that's interesting. I never really considered that the degrees of a circle should possibly link up with the orbit of the planet. Maybe it should. Maybe it should be 360 days, but they added 5 just to jack us up somehow. I mean, that does seem to be the overall game, create an unnatural cycle that's just a fraction off from what we would consider more harmonic or more natural. And if you can keep us away from unlocking those clues to the natural world's patterns, you can probably keep us in this dog-eat-dog 9-to-5, go-to-your-bullshit-job reality easier and keep us out of balance. Maybe it just adds to the internal stress people feel. But when I try to think about the control system as a whole, it's almost like we're victim of two systems. One that seems really out there that could be using this moon as a control center, an interplanetary system keeping us in an illusionary matrix playing off the rings of Saturn like grooves on a record. And if you put stock in anything that epic, it's not going to be the same as the more down-to-earth banking families and ancient priesthoods and elite who altered the calendar. At least I don't think so. It's more like they pulled the strings to create their own control mechanisms within the larger system that they can't escape either. In other words, we may be in a fishbowl with a couple piranhas trying to rule over it, but we're all still fish, and they have no more ability to break free from the water than we do. And maybe some multidimensional ancient intelligence or archons or Nephilim are the architects of the fishbowl itself.
Well,
you know what I'm getting at, man?
No, that's well said. I would also add that these piranha don't just have bigger teeth and bigger muscles than we do. They have secret knowledge, and knowledge is everything. And this harkens back to the Greek Elysian mysteries and all these things that you've heard about that the average person like me will never know because we're never initiated by someone who can tell us, how did we get here? What is this place really? What am I looking at when I see the sun? Why are equinoxes and solstices so damn important? All these things that have been hidden from us, and clearly you have hit it on the head by pointing out there are some people, we assume they are people, down here that seem to have a better handle on what the rules of this system are, and they take advantage of it to our shame, basically. We're controlled in this way. But then you point out, are these individuals capable of building a system that we think we can detect that is so massive? And I think logically, you struck on it. There's really two options here. There's maybe three. There's others. Some might say God, some might say aliens. Who knows? I can't tell you. That put this overarching kind of captive hold on our whole environment, our whole solar system, if there is such a thing. Or people did this. Somehow people got so advanced and they did this. Or the only third thing I can logically get to is there's a group of people here that are really kind of a different species. They're so much more intelligent than we are. Don't know. I mean, people will even talk about demons. I can't address any of that, but it is enough to know that we are in fact in a closed system.
Mm-hmm.
I can demonstrate this. Anyone who wants to go look at a number of rocket launches will show. And if you go to my channel, I have filmed things in orbit, or what we are told is orbit. My meager equipment can do that. Why is there not a single piece of footage of a rocket leaving our atmosphere? Why do they always arc out over the ocean? Why do a number of them look to be going down by the time we lose view? We are in a closed system. And I have stated for the record, we do not go on, above low Earth orbit for these reasons. Now, I did this through observation and logic, and I have found no reason to retract what I have said. But bottom line is, there's absolutely a group of people who, at a very early age, apparently, were taught a whole bunch of things in school that we were never taught.
Yeah, I'm with you. And I did just find this note I wanted to throw in there too, because it's from one of the Plus members, which we kind of talked about incorporating some of their comments into this, because it really is kind of it's a domino effect. We have the Plus show is there. People subscribe to the Plus show, which gives me enough money to survive. And then I've had enough money to break you off to write some of these articles. So
right.
It really is them that have been responsible for some of this. But this one guy, JKMB, commented on the subject of the moon and its cycles having an effect. He said, for example, I have intense, scary, vivid dreams during a new moon more than any other phase. I also seem to get sick during the full moon more than any other phase, because I keep a journal and it's easy to see those patterns. And I think that's really smart of him, because a lot of people who want to get into dreaming and lucid dreaming, they're told to keep a journal. And if you do, and you pay attention to the moon phases, I guess there's a good chance you'll find some kind of coordination between things you're experiencing in either your dreams or, maybe your allergies are worse, and the moon phases. Does that seem to be true to a larger extent?
I think so, and I will start this by saying there is no substitution for direct observation. I saw that comment by that individual. I was hoping we would talk about it. What you see is an individual who has decided to say, I'm going to go look for myself. the minute any individual does this, you're going to start to form a new reality that was not given you. You're told one thing, and what you will observe when you put your own private effort at it is something else altogether, which demonstrates that your reality can be handed to you, or you can shape your own reality. To take that a step further, the individual is pointing out that he sees correlations with the phases of the moon that have an effect on us. And there is no doubt this is true. Unfortunately, a lot of us are under the impression that there's this rock in space with gravity driving the tides, and they can't possibly consider that maybe there's some other system producing all these things we see, and that this invisible thing called gravity isn't really doing it. You know, not to be able to consider that is a shame, because you should be able to consider that. But I can tell from firsthand experience, I grow things a lot. I grow herbs in my garden. It is a well-known fact that at the full moon, your herbs have the most potency. I've demonstrated that to myself. In Hattie Bob's research, in the very front piece of that one lunar doc, he goes through, a 30-some bullet points, 20-some bullet points of all the known effects the moon has on us. But unfortunately, he says a couple things that people get stuck on, like inoculations will always be doomed to fail during the full moon. And so people say, well, that's just ridiculous, and they throw the baby out with the bathwater, which is unfortunate. But the point is, we do understand that the system we live in, the things we can see like the sun and moon, it's no secret, they do have an effect on us. I just stepped out from under the awning and the sun hit me. I'm warm. That's an observable effect. I know that for myself now. No one can lie to me now and say, when you step out under that big white thing in the sky, it's not going to have an effect on you, because I've proven to myself it does. The moon is no different. Now the question becomes, well, how is it doing all that? You know, Hattie Bob has his offer up to us, you know, that it's done with octaves. He states that there is a radiation that is coming from the moon. The way he describes it is that the moon is tuned to one octave and we are tuned to another, which is jail cell. It means anything living here doesn't need bars of a prison because we're tuned here. If we leave here, we cease to exist. If anything that was there came here, the reverse of that would be true. Mm-hmm. They can't. Like, so through tuning of octaves is keeping things where someone intended them to be. Now, having said this, if you consider that Hattie Bob is stating the radiation that comes from the moon is in perfect tune with us, so it does not harm us, he further states, at a full moon, you're getting 100% radiation. At half phase, you're getting 50% of it. So you can do the math down to understand what he's trying to say. It's clear. The sun and the moon have an effect on us. What's not clear is what those things are and how they are affecting us and why it is so damn important in all the archaic materials. Every old map you will ever see has the zodiac and the path of the sun and the equinoxes and solstices plotted. Why was that so damn important? Every ancient megalith monument that you see is aligned to equinoxes and solstices. There is clearly a very important aspect to these times of our existence here that we're not aware of. And to be frank, a lot of those times seem to be so important that they have to do with what goes on when we pass away,
yeah,
or when a baby is born. So I hope I kind of, in an oblique way, addressed you again. I keep getting off on tangents.
It's cool. I love it all. There is a little passage I was going to read from your second article here that really is exactly what we're talking about right now. But it says here, we now arrive at Hattie Bob's first description of the moon system that begins to explain the lunar wave. He states that the moon has two surfaces, an inner and an outer. The outer surface, the facade, is thinner on the side that faces Earth, 184 kilometers to be exact, which is pretty interesting that he puts an exact number on it. But I believe he is further stating that this facade is covering what he calls an ionic structure, which is cubic. The inner structure has a predominance of sulfur and radioactive rare earth elements, and the outer moon that we see, he says, is, quote, nothing. To me, this implies that it's an image of some sort that cannot be thought of as solid, and he later talks about the beings who created it with the octaves. Hattie Bob also states that the moon produces its own light and reflects nothing. The translation is, the luminosity of the moon is determined by the operation of its facilities, the sun and the earth. That is pretty interesting. Also, additionally, the shadow of the Earth is referred to as a tube used to communicate with the system in a way that I don't very understand very well just yet. But there is also a description using the word halo, which is said to be visible around the moon when the system on Earth is reset. Now, you also state that there's a little bit of debate there about the term halo being a correlation to the lunar wave, but I think that is pretty coincidental. I think that might be what he's trying to describe there.
Yeah, you know, here's the problem. I've had maybe between 5 and 10 translations from different people. A couple of the people said simply put the word halo and moon in a search engine for images, and that's what he's talking about. And it's like what we would think of as a sun dog, you know, the kind of ring you see around the moon sometimes. That's what those two people, that's what their opinion was. But others stopped dead right there, changed the color of the text, and said, there is your lunar wave. So again, you know, when we're trying to translate, of course we're going to get, you know, the flavor of the individual doing the translation wherever they're at currently in their kind of search for, you know, whatever they're looking for in life. To me, the main takeaway with what Hattie Bob did is when I filmed the lunar wave in 2012, it happened in such a mind-boggling way in such a few amount of seconds. Had I not, and I wasn't even tracking that night. I was doing a manual track. I didn't have the scope aligned. If I had not panned at exactly the moment I did to catch the beginning of the wave at the bottom and then pan above it, it would have been so difficult to make the argument that something important had been filmed. Mm-hmm. And it goes on from there. You know, me having the epiphany one night and taking the clip back out of the garbage finally some weeks later, and then sticking to my guns, making all these assertions, because intuitively I began to understand from constant observation that I had stated this is likely to happen near equinoxes. This is likely to happen near a full moon. I had said a number of these things, and Hattie Bob just echoed them verbatim. So for me, that's really the place where I will set my anchor and say, I arrived there, this man has arrived here. These other things are, I accept them into my knowing, but I don't accept them as true, but I will never forget them, hoping that something will occur that allows me to go another step up the staircase and assimilate some of the information. But I mean, let's face it, he starts talking about spider beings at some point. Mm-hmm. And the truth is, you know, you and I spoke about this. You watch all these modern movies, what do we see? All these multi-legged beings are kind of the meme these days. Right. And not only that, multi-legged beings that can go into people and control them. But beyond that, that's not proof of anything. That is a meme.
Exactly. And to elaborate on that aspect of it, when he's talking about this system and trying to describe it in his work, he places the exact date of 18,337. I don't know if that's years ago or years on some other calendar, but he cites that as the date of the moment this planet was no longer free. He states that aggressors that are 4 meters tall and look like spiders, which you say, you know, could equate to the Nephilim, came from the constellation Ursa Major in a biosphere and captured this solar system. He also states that one planet and some moons were destroyed, which formed the meteor or asteroid belt. Then they are said to have arrived in a caravan containing a thermosis that contained hundreds of moons or planetary control systems like ours. And during the takeover, the surface of Mars was destroyed and the octave of the planet was reduced to the lowest cycle of 44 octaves. In the
Or death.
I'm sorry?
I apologize. Or death, 44.
Oh, yeah. And it's further claimed that the brains of certain beings already here were taken over. And if you take that little paragraph from Hattie Bob's research, you can see so many different movies and memes, again, that allude to that. And what a strange coincidence, you know?
Right. And we, you know, there are numbers of people I know that will hear this that understand that movies are really not about entertainment at their base. Well, they are. They're made to hypnotize you with entertainment. But people who are mildly awake understand what is being done with movies. And I have written about this for you. But here's my issue. I have arrived at a point where it looks like we're within a broken system. And I wrote an article recently where I used 9/11 to demonstrate that. Mm-hmm. If you look at it in numerology, every time someone says 9/11, they have skipped 10. Well, 9 is a completion date in the same way that 1 is the beginning of a new cycle. So if you count 1, you're starting a cycle all the way up to 9, that's completion. When you go to 10, 1 plus 0, which is 10, becomes 1 again. That rolls you back to a new cycle. Now, this is kind of esoteric to think about, to be sure, but nonetheless, When you say 9/11, you are referring to a broken system that has gone to completion, skipped the jump back to 1, went to 11, which is actually 2, so it's like an endless loop in a broken cycle. It appears to me that we're almost living in some kind of a replicated system of something that is fully functioning, which is why when I read that Hattie Bob stuff and I see the memes in the movie, I wonder to myself, is he referring to a time before when things were different, when this deception that we see everywhere was not here? And are we really looking at something else altogether now? I recently did a clip on a thought experiment of the moon where I used Google Earth to demonstrate that the moon is not the distance away from us they have told you. It just isn't. I can see with my naked eye a crater called Aristarchus. It's white. Most people can see it if you have decent eyes or glasses. It's roughly 40 miles, the little white mark that it makes. That's even a little bigger than it is. But you can see this 40-mile circle from Earth with your eye. So I loaded up that crater on Earth and went 40,000 miles up in Google Earth, which is the max it'll allow, and you can't see the dot anymore, yet the moon is 6 times further away than Google Earth will allow me to go from the dot. And so it's a thought experiment that demonstrates we're looking at false descriptions of things. And, you know, the last clips put up Jupiter and Saturn, when you consider the distance of these things, is it really possible? Is it possible that something that's 93 million miles or however many, I'm misquoting distances, so don't correct me, please, just many millions of miles away these objects are, is that a possible thing? And when you shift out of your I believe mind into, wait a minute, what's really feasible here, you start to come away with a much different picture. So, you know, that whole thing you just described from Hattie Bob, although I'm sure there's got to be value in it, it just feels like there's value in it. It even correlates, as you pointed out, with movies that we see. Something is being echoed. But is it echoing where we are now or where we once were? I don't know.
Yeah, man. And the thing about the connection to Hollywood is people would say, well, that's anecdotal. They make infinite movies. Of course, a couple of them are going to have connections to something. But you can look at it a different way and say, you know, it's a widely accepted fact that Jewish people are largely in control of Hollywood. And
that's right.
The Kabbalah is the oldest form or one of the oldest forms of magic on the planet that I'm aware of. And there's some deep, deep insights there. So if you say the secret society of sorts has held on to ancient information from antiquity to now and passed it through their lineage and their closed door system, why is it so hard to think that they would use this source material maybe to pay reverence to it as some of the things that we see in sci-fi movies? It makes sense to me. It's not that far of a leap.
No, it's actually logical. I mean, you really have two choices here. Something close to what you just described is akin to what's really going on, or we have aliens that are infinitely smarter than us walking among us. Which one of those two things do you want to accept? You know, it almost comes down to a logical argument that you're forming like that. And I know that's kind of a poor example, but the point being, I don't see any way in the world that these kind of leaders and monarchs who have always had everything, the money, the ability to go get the knowledge, secret knowledge that's discovered or ancient knowledge that's been handed through family trees, there's just no way that these people are not holding their poker hand, which is 5 aces,
mm-hmm.
You know, and you and I are basically being dealt no hand at all, yet sitting at the table putting chips in. It's like that. I think you're exactly right. I don't know how you can arrive at any other really operating idea than that.
So my last real question for you is I just wanted to ask you before we called it in about any of your recent filming you've done since we've talked last. If any of that is significant, might be worth a mention.
Yeah, you know, there was this crazy thing that happened one night, and it's a good thing that we can kind of close up with, I guess. For those that are not aware, I finally got a full spectrum camera that shoots a little bit into IR, a little bit into UV, and full spectrum as well. So Croat and I were out shooting the moon, and it was her turn, and where I tend to go for high odds and keep centered on the moon, she likes to move all around. But we had set auto ISO so that when you leave the moon, the sky lights up because the ISO corrects. Which was a cool thing. We found that we could track some things beyond the face of the moon, which we couldn't do before. But she was messing around with this, and this little blip of light went off in the upper left frame of a clip she kept. And so I got it in and I started looking at it, and all of a sudden I realized, wow, that is something interesting. It turned out to be, and I should preface, I had my visual spectrum camera with a telephoto and a doubler on the moon. So basically an 1800 millimeter lens on the moon. So I was filming in visual spectrum, and then I had my full spectrum through the scope. And took it in, and I looked at the full spectrum footage through the telescope, and there was this vortex that just appears out of nowhere, looks like it almost spins in a funnel shape with a hole down the middle of it, and then goes away. And so then I got the correlating visual spectrum from the telephoto that was only in visual, and you can't detect anything in the visual spectrum. It's not magnified as much, but you would expect that maybe you'd see a dot of light or something. So that was one thing that really stands out as, wow, what the heck was that? It was just a little ways away from our view of the moon, and it was shot in full spectrum, apparently not visible in visual spectrum, and it is clearly some type of vortex.
Mm. Wow, man, that's interesting. Oh, well, Crow, it's always a blast. Before we really go, please remind people where to find your footage, and let us know if there's any new direction that you're taking this research in, or anything you'd like to leave people with.
Okay, and I appreciate this moment, because first off, you can always find me on YouTube. That's really my main public interface, and my channel is Crow777. It's spelled C-R-R. So there's two R's, C-R-R-O-W 777. And actually, you can usually just put Crow or something close to it, and I'll come up in YouTube. I have all my interesting footage posted there, and that's really the only way to contact me, although I just can't keep up with comments like I once could. It's just too much at this point.
Amen.
But I do have a new endeavor that I was not sure I was going to announce. I am doing something similar to what you did. I mean, I understand you were working to fund a trip. I'm funding a rather massive trip to get away from this city that has blocked the sky for so much, and I guess I don't want to say too much about it, because I don't want to precede myself in some way with trouble or an obstacle. But I'm working to fund a trip that I will take with all my equipment, and I mean all of it, and that's no easy feat. That's a bit like packing one hell of a rack of luggage up. And I'm going to go to places that are some of the darkest skies. I'm going to go to the places that will allow me to do some things I cannot do here, and it's going to be over a number of weeks. So that is what I have on the horizon, and I guess I'll leave it at that. I just don't want to tip my hand too much, because sometimes I get the feeling people are eyeballing me in ways I wouldn't like, and other times I think maybe I'm just crazy. So
I know.
I'll leave it at that.
It's a fine line between the two, but that is really interesting and a great idea. We both live really near the airport here in San Diego, and the trails from planes, chemtrails or otherwise, have definitely obscured your view more than a couple of times. So that's really the next evolution. What else can you do but get to a more clear environment to try to get a clearer picture? I think that your head's in the right spot.
Oh, let's say one more thing. I thought we should mention this. Don't know if you've realized it. The traffic that we see from the San Diego International Airport has plummeted. In all the time that I have done this interview today, and we've been on for over 2 hours, not one passenger plane has passed within my field of view. When I used to film the moon at night, back in the day, back a year or more ago, we would see endless planes coming and leaving and coming and leaving.
Yeah.
I went on flight radar and I see it, so I'm putting it out there. Don't know what's going on, but it's almost certainly a thermometer or something. This has been going on for months, and there it is.
Damn, I have noticed that too. Usually it's every hour there's a big plane coming down over the city, but you mentioned it to me about a week ago, and since, I mean, yeah, there are fewer planes now that I'm looking at it. I don't know what it means either, but right on, man. I like to think we get a little closer to understanding this world with each new interview. I think this one has been awesome. We covered a whole lot of ground, and I guess I'm looking forward to those next 5 articles, man.
Right on. They'll be coming. I kind of held off till we did this.
Yeah. All right. Well, until that time, man, take care of yourself.
All right. Thanks for having me, bud.
You got it.
One toke over the line. Sweet Jesus, people. There we have it. So much stuff in that full 3-hour show. Crow obviously is a little more guarded about taking the speculation too far, but that's a testament to his integrity, and he's already getting enough shit. And I'm weird enough for both of us, so I hope you liked it. In the Plus show, we went deeper into the genotypes, the moon-mind download that apparently occurs during Easter or the spring equinox, the possible connections that this has to sleep and dreaming. I mean, why are we unconscious for a third of our short lives? We talked about Hadibov's case that he makes that the Great Pyramid is older than the moon based on its alignments, the date he gives for 18,000 years ago and how this might jive with the Great Flood. Talk about more holes in NASA's data, our issues with the flat Earth community and how some of them have been going after Crow, more moon weirdness, the weaponization of sound. I mean, why does the Queen knight so many musicians unless they're doing something for the system? We also got into Eric Dollard's research and how that fits in. All around, I loved it. With Crow, I'd expect nothing less. And we'll hear from Crow again when his next 5 articles come out. Hopefully some revelations happen in the meantime. But I'm so into this stuff. I mean, how far does the lie go? How many moves ahead on the chessboard of life are they really? What have we taken for granted in our lifetimes that really shouldn't be taken for granted at all? Crow brings up that once a person or organization lies to you once, they shouldn't be trusted. And that sounds logical to me. But then on a basic level, we all know Columbus didn't discover America, but thousands of kids are being taught that right now. And maybe this isn't a huge deal to some people, but we know it's not true. And when you unravel what the truth might be about certain empires exploiting the Americas in secret, the hundreds of giant skeletons found, the Native American legends of their warring with giants, the Egyptian artifacts found in the Grand Canyon, it starts to seem a little more nefarious, a little more like a cover-up, and a little less innocent. But we all just laugh it off, like we all know Santa isn't real. Well, to me and many of us, we're questioning the entire timeline of history, from guys like Graham Hancock to the more fringe ideas of Michael Tesarion or Michael Cremo. And if history is so suspect, let's look at math. Where's the sacred geometry? Where's the underlying understanding that math has, but isn't included in the education of the young? And then we have science, where we're finding a big quarantine around what Joseph Farrell calls a hidden physics, what other researchers are calling electrogravitic or magnetic energy. We can see guys like John Hutchinson making solid objects float on camera on YouTube, but mainstream science just isn't interested. Guys like Stan Deo are filing patents for what they think are new technologies, only to be whisked away by the shadow state into secret projects hidden away from the rest of us. Then we have NASA and other space agencies that all seem to have the same symbol embedded in their logos. What a random coincidence for apparently competing organizations. I wonder what else was discussed at that meeting. Why has NASA's technology almost completely leveled off since the 1960s? I say it can't advance without giving away some major secrets that we're trying to find out. Many of us doubt the moon landing, and China's been caught faking footage in a pool that they pass off as space. So what are we doing, still looking at these guys as authorities and educators on the cutting edge? We don't want to take the journey, so we just look at these established institutions and say, oh, they got it. Well, that's not the case. But it's the conspiracy theorists everyone's skeptical of. Well, if I had a multi-generational, multifaceted propaganda machine squeezing every last bit of reason from the collective unconscious, I'd be able to have you skeptical of your own family. Of course, we have the medical establishment too, where they ignore guys like Rick Simpson and many others who have claimed to have been able to cure cancer via simple means before they were shut down and ostracized. And our pharmaceuticals have more side effects than benefits, as if there isn't any other way. But don't think about it too hard. The experts have got it. And they're doing everything they do for the benefit of mankind. Yeah, I'm sure that's true. So before anyone starts talking about what they think they know, look around. Examine the credibility of your teachers, and you'll find that very little has been put into your head for your benefit. Very little can be taken for granted. And really, if you're not making money for somebody, you're on your own. That's it for me this week. Your frickin' move.
Carwood, it's your show now. So what's it gonna be? 'Cause people we'll tune in to hear another new conspiracy. Almost too much of, we thought this was low. It's bad, getting worse. So where'd all the good people go? They're on the Higher Side Chats 'cause it's everybody's favorite show. Where'd all the good people go? He got Jamar's coat in white, and then there's Crow. They talk this and that on the Higher Side Chat, testing 1, 2, now what you gonna do? Bad news, misuse, got too much to lose. Give me some truth, now whose side we on? Whatever you say, turn on the boob tube. I'm in the mood to obey, so lead me astray. By the way now, where'd all the good people go? They locked him up, it seems, for protesting Monsanto. Where'd all the good people go? They're on the THC, my favorite show. Sitting down, new episode to hear. Wanna light a bolt, but I fear the police. Can you hear me? Can't interrupt me from this friendly conversation. Been waiting all week for THC. With the Carwood, there's no hesitation. Exposing the truth, getting to the elite. Scams, schemes, conspiracies, and treason. It's an excellent show. What I need to know is, where'd all the good people go? Been only getting hate and fear from all the other hoes. Where'd all the good people go? Guess that makes THC my favorite show. They talk this and that on the highest side chat. Testing 1, 2, now what you gonna do? Bad news, misuse, got, give me some truth. You got too much to lose. Whose side are we on today? Anyway, okay, whatever you say. Wrong and resolute, but in the mood to obey. Station to station, desensitizing the nation. Going gone.
As you mop up the remnants of your melted mind, consider this. The high-quality, commercial-free show you just enjoyed is what we call THC-free. But you can spend twice as much time with Greg Carlwood and all his great guests by becoming a member of the Higher Side Chats Elite for just $5. And you'll get the 5 extended 2-hour episodes that come out each month. Because an honest, open-minded, and uncensored exploration into the fringe will never be brought to you by your corporate overlords, but rather must be funded by the loyal listeners willing to take that ride. So join at thehiresidechatsplus.com, and on top of twice as much show, get your own easy-to-use RSS feed URL for convenient listening on any device. Suggest guests on your member profile, comb through the archives of all the ones you missed, and continue the conversation even further on the new THC Plus forum, where you can scratch that higher side itch in between shows with the rest of us and hold your head up high, knowing that your subscription supports a show you love, produces the free version for everyone else, and stands as a small act of rebellion against those nefarious puppet masters of the power pyramid. Treat yourself. It's time.